I do believe that when we have this healthcare AI ecosystem, where the agents are actually abstracting away and communicating with each other, that's when we get the true power and experience to live in this AI world. You know, when a patient gets care coordinated without juggling five different apps, then we know that AI has matured, not just when it dazzles, but when it disappears into how the work gets done.
Hi, Archie. Thanks so much for joining us on the Agentic AI podcast today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me, Anthony. Hi, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening to us today. I am Archie Mayani, Chief Product Officer at GHX, Global Healthcare Exchange. We sit at the intersection of healthcare and supply chain. So think of us as this invisible operating layer that helps hospitals get the right product at the right time, and most importantly, at the right cost. So, you know, that's why our mission is to provide affordable, quality healthcare for all. In some ways, you know, it is kind of unsexy to automate things that are sort of, you know, under the operating layer. But if you think about things we do actually are mission critical to the infrastructure of healthcare. And believe it or not, AI plays a big role here. It has always played a big role. You know, GHX has been at the forefront, an AI-driven company, even before we named it as artificial intelligence. So think about OCR days. We were one of the first pioneers of that technology to use it in healthcare supply chain. So today, obviously, it looks very, very different with generative AI and all the, you know, all the agentic experiences that one can develop. So it is about predicting shortages. It's about helping health system negotiate better contracts or using, you know, natural language to simplify how clinicians and supply chain teams can work together, again, in service to provide value-based outcomes and affordable care for patients where they need it most. We are not just building tech for healthcare. The way I love to describe it is we are building resilience into healthcare. And that's why, you know, no surprises or guesses, our AI is actually called GHX Resiliency AI.
I love it. And I, like you're saying, I love, it's a great opportunity to have you here, Archie, because I think very often we talk in AI with people with AI that's very kind of business focused. And obviously what you have is a business, but something that's involved in something like healthcare, I think it really brings home the kind of impact of AI at a societal level where people are at their most, where people need it most, you know? I think we talk a lot about the negatives of AI. And I love that you're here to talk to us about something that is, you know, absolutely essential. And AI is, you know, it being utilized in a way to really help people in ways that they need help the most. I think it's a really, really great opportunity. And I wanted to kick off by talking a little bit about one of the hot topics at the moment is responsible AI and the ethics of AI. And obviously your industry in particular, that's obviously absolutely paramount. Ethics and responsibility is more important than anything else. So I just wanted to get your perspective then on what a responsible AI means to you, both within your industry and in a broader sense as well. What does that mean to you?
You know, I've always loved your content, Anthony, but you know, you grounding our whole conversation right here, like that is going to be probably my favorite part of today, because we don't talk about responsible AI as much as we should, not just because I'm from healthcare, but I think, you know, it might, you think about healthcare, you know, responsible AI. Yes, of course, they go hand in hand because we're talking about human lives. It is not optional. It is life critical. And I get it, right? Like if you're building a dating app, a hallucination is a funny story. But in an operating right? It's a lawsuit, or worse, a life lost. And so we focus on transparency and grounding. To me, that is the most important thing about building AI responsibly. And I think that's why, you know, it is important that we talk about what goes into those ethics of building responsible technology, AI or not. For example, when we build and train our AI models to predict on-time delivery of surgical supplies, we train them on trading partner data, both from providers with fulfillment data layered in supplier reliability, logistical delays, even data from, you know, past natural disasters. We also pair every disruption prediction with a confidence score of criticality and sensitivity and the data sources behind it. Because if you are going to trust a model, it needs to explain itself like a good clinician would. Again, if you can think about, if you remember anything about this conversation, it is this, right? If you can't explain it like a good clinician would, your AI agent, your AI model is not going to be as optimized or as effective, because again, you haven't really taken the time to abstract away exactly what the value is going to be. And I think it's important to even look at, you know, some of the past learnings. You know, when some of the first models came out for early mammograms, right? When the data wasn't trained right on, you know, diverse demographics, diverse ethnicities, race, class, you got a model which we now understood as, you know, hallucinating. It didn't predict accurately or sensitively because you didn't have the right data sets to be able to predict that a breast from a woman of African American origin is going to look very, very different in terms of tissue density versus a Caucasian woman. So you have to be able to, you know, have that learning mindset, but ultimately it is really about making sure that you have the right data governance, you have the right and diverse data sets, and you're taking the time to build the learning into the model itself.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I mean, what we come back to, I think, again and again and again, is that AI models are only as good as what you put into them. Exactly. In a way, aren't they? I think that's always the chief learning here. It doesn't take responsibility away from us. You know, in a way, we are responsible for what goes in, I think, very much so. And I think, you know, we talked a lot at AI about biases and how if an AI model has bias, often it's reflective of our own societal bias. Very often, you know, you can't blame the model. It's showing something on us. You know, it's reflective.
It's the coder that's actually, you know, building the model. It's the human bias. It's like you said, the societal bias. Very well said, Anthony.
Yeah, I think it's definitely true. Yeah. And I think it's more important than ever. I think, you know, that going back to the ethical side, I think, let's be honest, this is something that scares people, isn't it? I think it would, like any new technological innovation, especially in an industry like you're in, it's something that does make people a little bit uncomfortable. And I think we have to take great pains, not just to take care with it, but also to persuade people and to earn trust and show that this is something that, you know, is really going to be, you know, we understand why it's scary, but this is why it's going to work.
Yeah. Good, because you're going to scale these agents and AI platforms to millions and billions of users. You better be sure about what you're putting out there and having that diligence to make it bias-free, as you said. So I'm with you. That it should scare us because it's going to make us better.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm glad you brought up scaling, because that's where we're going to talk about next. Actually, my previous podcast guest, one of the things he mentioned is one of the biggest challenges that a lot of people are talking about right now is scaling, especially in relation to agentic AI. I wanted to talk about this again in the context of what you do. How do we scale these kind of an agentic AI model in what you're in your industry, in a way that sort of means that it's effective across many different contexts, still maintaining performance? What do you think?
You know, I will say this. I think any product leader today wakes up worried about two things. One is scale and the other is monetization as we talk about living in this new AI world. So, you know, scaling agentic AI in healthcare is like introducing a new surgical technique. You have to prove it works and then prove it works everywhere, right? That's what scaling is all about. So a model trained on data from Mayo Clinic can't be just copy-pasted into a community hospital in rural Arkansas. When we have a product, for example, called Resiliency Center, and what it does, it really actually, like I mentioned earlier, it accurately categorizes and predicts, you know, possible or potential disruption in supply chain and then recommends product alternatives during these disruptions. We made sure that it works across dozens of ERP systems, catalog mismatches, and evidence-based, you know, recommendations where, hey, this particular, you know, pack of gloves or catheters, as a better example, will, you know, is going possibly going to be backordered because of X, Y, and Z. And here are your alternatives based on the clinical evidence, you know, their near neighborhood substitutes. And I think that to me is scaling, that the model, it's like I said, you know, ultimately you have to be able to have the right product at the right time, at the right cost. And the definition of right is rooted into this quality outcome for the patient and providing access to affordable care. So everywhere. And I think that everywhere is where how I think about scaling. And again, it actually sort of marries into your earlier question. You can't, you know, scale unless you are training it on the right data sets and making sure that you have feedback loops to, you know, correct any hallucinations, if you will.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I love that. Great. So let's talk a little bit about data then, because, you know, healthcare data can be, you know, you've talked about how complicated it is. Sort of data in different contexts means different things. And it's often kind of fragmented. You know, very, you know, healthcare data can be quite fragmented. How do you kind of overcome the challenge of that? I mean, you've talked about how, you know, the incredible magnitude of data needed in order to scale. But can you kind of take me through, because obviously this is not my thing, how do we go about this? How do we go about kind of finding order in this, you know, and kind of making sure that you know, we have some kind of, I guess, synthesis in a way that works for everyone, I suppose, is what I'm asking.
And, you know, that is such a good question, right? I think, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, scaling, making sure it's performant and bias-free, all of that, it ultimately comes to the diversity and the governance of the data. Imagine training a model to detect supply chain disruptions using only data from California. It might completely miss how hurricane seasons wrecked, you know, in the Southeast, or how snowstorms delayed shipments in Minnesota, you know, 2 years ago. We had a case where our models could, you know, we could see that, you know, it would start flagging a surgical glove shortage that only showed up in smaller rural hospitals. Why? Because their reorder thresholds were very different and they didn't have buffer stock like a large IDN would have with their distributors' relationships. So that insight came from a diverse data set. You know, healthcare isn't a monolith. It is a mosaic, because, you know, if you think about the differences in the data sets where certain attributes may not even be relevant to a particular region, while they might become very, very critical to certain other entities, that diversity is essential. I think the other piece that we don't talk enough about is trust. Who has these data sets and who can actually affect and impact this kind of learning and prediction with accuracy and sensitivity? I think GHX, that's why, plays such a critical role, you know, having been sort of that trusted arbiter between the providers and the suppliers for the last 25 years. And so you do need, with that siloed aspect of healthcare data, you need a trusted entity to work, you know, within the different parts of the stakeholder ecosystem within healthcare to make sure you do have not only the diverse data sets, but the most accurate, most reliable, most trusted data sets in the world that you can use your models or agents to get trained on. So I think that's why I would say, you know, to your question, yes, diverse data sets are very, very critical. So is the trusted credibility around these data sets.
Right, I see. So it's a kind of two-pronged approach then, isn't it? Yeah, it's like, because you might get diverse data, but some of that data perhaps is less important or less pertinent than others, I suppose, but can cause problems potentially.
Or it may be an ancient data set that is not even relevant today because, you know, that silo was never updated or impacted. And having all the stakeholders play a unification role in some ways. For example, our models, as I mentioned, you know, it cannot work, you know, in isolation without a provider, you know, your hospital systems and your suppliers, because it's, you know, you cannot have the completeness and the trusted data sources if you're just going to see it from the providers or just from the suppliers. So you need both sides of the network. And I think in our case, it's actually beyond a network. It's an ecosystem. So we need to work with electronic medical records. We need to work with ERPs. We need to work with all of the different stakeholders in the system so that we have the diversity and sort of that veracity of the data that we are looking for.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Diversity and veracity in tandem, I think, is a great takeaway from this, certainly. Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's take it back then to, let's talk more about agentic AI then, in a sense that, you know, maybe there are some people listening who aren't that clued in on it, or maybe, you know, haven't had much experience on it. I want you to talk to me a little bit more about, you know, you talked about how AI has had an impact in healthcare for quite a long time. What has agentic AI, what difference has that made in particular? What impact has that had? And also, can you talk a little bit in the broader sense about how you see it having a broader impact in society as a whole?
Yes, that's a very thoughtful question, Anthony. You know, we've always leveraged classical machine learning and AI within healthcare. You know, yes, the adoption has been slow, and rightfully so, because, you know, we want to make sure that as we are leveraging new technologies, we are confident. It's like I said, you know, you prove it once and then you prove that it works for everything else. What I will say is we've always had a component of, you know, even beyond GHX and what we do within supply chain, we've always had classical AI that has been leveraged to, you know, predict the most, you know, the sickest patients with the most comorbidities of issues to make sure that the right patients are being prioritized. But also, you know, I talked about, you know, mammography and the early screenings, you know, so in the diagnostic space, you know, we've used AI very, very well. In fact, probably one of the first uses of AI as we understand today. But, you know, agentic AI is different. I think now we are talking about workflows and abstracting them. And if you think about what's happening in healthcare at large, you know, not just, certainly, you know, it's a big challenge in the US healthcare system where we have, you know, shortage of labor, both, you know, back office and clinical. You look at the headwinds where it is about, you know, things are getting more expensive and you have fewer resources to get them done. So, and you have fewer, you know, trained physicians on the floor. So if you think about all of the headwinds that are there, agentic AI has a true potential to be that co-pilot that we've always wanted. And it could end up being a connective tissue, really, in how the care is being provided to a patient. For example, say a patient shows up at the ED with a recurring asthma. Clinically, you know, the ER physician is going to treat it. But what if the agentic AI, flags that the patient lives in a subsidized housing near a pollution site and has missed key follow-ups due to lack of transportation. You know, that is now suddenly, you know, you're not treating a condition, you are addressing a root cause. And then we talked about affordability. This is how we can start reducing the waste in the system, because we're not, you know, doing, we're not just providing service, a tactical service to cure the patient then. Now we can actually address the root causes of why the patient keeps showing up at the ER with the same recurring condition. So I, you know, this is something, this is from my past life, actually, many years ago, actually 15 years ago, where we looked at, you know, what we call the whole person care model. And at the time, obviously, there were no AI agents. There were community health workers, you know, who were actually trying to put the whole longitudinal record together, making sure the patients followed up. But imagine if we had AI to do this faster and more effectively. So I do think that agentic AI can actually become your one of the deep caretaking member of your cross-functional, you know, care team. It can intervene earlier, it can coordinate better, and really see the full picture, you know, the whole person care.
Yeah, one of the things I love that you mentioned there is gets the root cause faster, because of course that is, I mean, I'm obviously not in healthcare, but I imagine that is one of the biggest costs, the things that makes it most costly, I think, treatment is how much time it takes to get to a solution. I imagine sometimes increases the cost of age. And yeah,
that is so true. We're all going back to the early adage, you know, prevention is better than cure. And I think right now, as we are fighting costs and waste, it hasn't been truer than any other time before in human lives. So yes, there is a lot of focus on the preventative aspects of care and making sure that you're addressing the root causes versus just providing a service and becoming a service industry, if you will.
Yeah, I love it. Definitely. Yeah, I think it's something that kind of, you know, can be, I think, you know, can really like, I love how you mentioned that, you know, the whole holistic care, like you said, this is a term that we have heard for many, many, many years, that this is in the truest sense, like, you know, that this is actually a realistic way where you've, the way you've described it, where we can really get there in practical terms, you know, which I love. Yeah, absolutely love. Okay, well, let's go back in time a little bit then. We've witnessed in the past couple of years, you may have noticed, a few global crises, especially in relation to healthcare in particular. Yeah, and I feel like,
you know, like I said, only a few. You know, when COVID hit, the supply chain broke, not because we didn't have the data, but because we didn't have the foresight. And I think that, you know, now, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, right? So when I think about sort of all of the fragility in the healthcare supply chain, despite having, you know, healthcare is one industry where we have 4x times data than any other industry, right? But look about the failures and the root causes of those failures. Actually, the promise of agentic AI becomes even more prominent. So imagine a system that not only notices that a critical item like ventilator filter is at risk, it recommends 5 clinically approved, remember, which are evidence-based substitutes, sorted by cost, delivery time, and supplier risk. Now we've built early versions of this into our resiliency center at GHX, and I am so proud to say that if there was another event like that, the teams are so much better suited to turning our supply chain from reactive to proactive, like going from a smoke detector to a sprinkler system, if you will. So I do feel like, you know, the companies have come away with a lot of learning during those disruptions. And I can see so much innovation through and through, not just within healthcare, but, you know, overall supply chain management, where I think data is being put at work so that we don't create another fragility crisis, but actually build resiliency into our existing systems. So I do think that while it was a tragedy and a lot of lives lost, I believe we are better prepared now for some of those supply chain disruptions that could hit us, not just because of the next pandemic, but, you know, the geopolitical risks, like I said, you know, the headwinds or that the provider organizations and supplier organizations are facing, or even, you know, some of the administration decisions, right? As we've understood and tried to evaluate the impact of tariffs, you know, we've been at the forefront helping our suppliers and our providers to make sure that they have the right data sets to actually drive that visibility and make the right decision for their organizations and for their patients. So while a supply chain disruption is never, you know, truly, you know, predictable, I do believe we have a lot of resiliency mechanisms built into the systems of today.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think sometimes it's one of those unfortunate things, isn't it, that sometimes a crisis has to happen in order for people to, I mean, I hate to say that about something like COVID, but it does, generally, there's an expression, isn't there, that necessity leads to innovation very often. When you're created with a problem like that, that's when people start innovating, isn't it? And start thinking, well, how can it not happen? And of course, nobody could have foreseen what happened in 2020. You know, it was absolutely...
Nobody could have, but you know, it became a compelling event to first centralize our data into the cloud, right? We were, I remember in 2018, 2019, the healthcare organizations were still talking about cloud, like, yeah, you know, we need to adopt cloud, but we're worried about our mission critical systems. You know, what if it goes down? You know, will I still have it? Now, you know, we're not, I think, again, it was truly a compelling event to move the industry from adoption to acceleration, starting with cloud and now with the newest of technologies like AI and Gen AI. To be true.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about AI hallucinations then. We touched on it a little bit before. What does that look like in something like healthcare? We know you mentioned that it's kind of, you know, it's something that we joke about, don't we, in relation to other things. Obviously, you know, it is quite funny. And in a way, I think it's quite good that we can find humor in the mistakes that AI make. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more. I know we touched on it, but maybe just elaborate a bit more on what the stakes are in relation to what you're dealing with something like a hallucination, and how it can potentially happen, or what it has looked like when it has happened, whether you've witnessed it yourself, and how we could possibly prevent it.
Yeah. You know, hallucinations are tricky. I will say that. You know, even with the right set of data sets, even with the rigorous training, it can and it will happen. In my earliest of modeling days, where we were actually building diagnostic models to, you know, either, you know, test, you know, lung nodules or, you know, early breast cancer detection. These diagnostic models, you know, they would hallucinate time to time because, you know, of the density in a certain data set. Also, I think it's very, you know, in some ways, the nature of the beast is a little bit unpredictable. So yes, while you are trying to limit those hallucinations with the diversity and the veracity of the data sets that we talk about, you know, it will happen. So one of the things that I have learned fast is that if your AI tells, for example, a materials manager to order a product that doesn't exist or is backordered for 12 weeks, you lose all trust. Just like, you know, you are going to tell a healthy woman that you have 98% probability of early breast cancer. In both scenarios, you know, you're going to lose all trust very, very quickly. So we've put in constraints, especially in our supply chain models, to only suggest items from active validated catalogs. So in this particular example, again, we are talking about the veracity of the data, the relevancy of the data versus the diversity of the data. We also do AI shadowing, which is letting the model make predictions while a human still makes the final decision. So we have a lot of these early intervention or mechanisms in the models that we put a human in the loop at first until we are confident that it's, you know, right 99.99% of the time. Think of it as, again, you know, residency training for AI. So, you know, you're not until you're ready.
I love that. That reminds me of like where you have a junior doctor being shadowed by a more senior one. That's what it's like, isn't it? I love that. Yeah. And I think, yeah, and it makes sense, doesn't it? With something as serious as this, it's absolutely essential that you have human supervision with these kind of things, I think, you know, and human monitoring. So I love to hear about that. It's great to look behind the curtain there. So Archie, it's been fantastic. Great, great discussion. Really, really loved it. I'm going to ask you to take, this is what I ask all the guests to do, and it can sometimes be a little bit daunting, but kind of look into your crystal ball a little bit. And what excites you the most, I guess, about the potential for agentic AI? Obviously, no one can know exactly where it's going to go, but what do you predict and what are you excited about in this regard?
You know, that is such a good question. I'm going to actually take a few seconds to think, because I think I'm going to actually iterate a concept that not a lot of our, you know, not a lot of our healthcare leaders are thinking about just yet. So I think the most exciting, you know, crystal ball vision for me is when AI disappears, when it truly, truly disappears. And what do I mean by that? When I think about AI disappearing, it means that my AI resiliency agent at GHX is talking to the AI agent within the EMR. So a nurse gets a surprise delivered without placing an order because the two agents have talked to each other and understood that there is going to be a possible intervention or a procedure or a surgery taking place on X date. This is what is on the nurse's and the physician's preference card. It's that agent has already communicated to the GHX AI resiliency agent, and the agents have figured out exactly the right product for the right patient at the right cost at the right time. That is a true win in my mind. So I do believe that when we have this healthcare AI ecosystem where the agents are actually abstracting away and communicating with each other, that's when we get the true power and experience to live in this AI world. You know, when a patient gets care coordinated without juggling five different apps, then we know that AI has matured, not just when it dazzles, but when it disappears into how the work gets done. And to be honest, you know, like I said, you know, maybe not a lot of leaders are thinking about this, but I know few of my peers have very similar visions. So I do think the future isn't 10 years away. It's already beginning now.
Yeah, I love that. Like the idea that it becomes just part of the air, right? It's just part of something that we do every day. I think it, in some respects, like your more classical kind of AI has become a little bit like that in a way. I had a conversation with my mother the other day, and she, because she's in her 60s, you know, and she was like, I don't know anything about AI. I've never interacted with it. And I was like, well, Mum, have you got a phone? Have you been on, do you use software tools? Like, you have, yes, you have interacted with AI. You just don't really.
Like of me, you know, from 5 years ago, because it sent you a reminder. That's also AI.
Yeah, exactly. It's like people don't, we've already got to a point where I think where people are interacting with it, using it and not realizing that they are or not thinking about it. And I'm excited for when that starts to happen with agentic AI as well. I think this is one thing I've said to a lot of people is that I think with any technological discovery or an innovation, obviously AI has been around for quite a long time, but it's only sort of become part of, I guess, the cultural kind of conversation in a big way recently. And I think with anything, like there's the fear stage, isn't there, initially? And then you kind of get out of the fear stage and you get into the discovery stage. And I think we're kind of in the discovery phase now, maybe inching a little bit into the kind of normalized stage, you know, where it's kind of becoming more normal. And I love that. You know, I remember when it was when ChatGPT first landed, and all anyone was talking about was how frightening it was, like how amazing it was. And yet at the same time, how frightening it was, you know. It's going to take everyone's job. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. And, you know,
and you're still there, but it's like you said, it's our job as leaders and as users to make sure that Anthony's talking to his mom and I'm talking to my teams and my customers to say, look, it's never about the agents taking over the world or taking over humans. They are here so that we can do higher order bits. And they can abstractivate things that don't need as much creativity, and there's a predictability to it. So it was such a pleasure talking to you, Anthony.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great note to end. Thank you so much, Archie, for today.
You too. Thank you. And I hope the listeners, you know, get to enjoy this and share some of their own feedback and learnings along the way.
Sure they will. Thank you so much.